Okay, we never.
I was born in Vallejo. My parents, Mr. and Mrs. Stevens, up my brothers. I had three brothers, and two sisters. There were six of us. And I was the, of course, my mother lost two little babies. And that made me the person, well, fifth child in the family. I had two brothers, and no, I wasn't. I'm wrong. I had two brothers and a sister, and I was the third. So, see, I was the next. I mean, I was the fourth child. See, I was the fourth child in the family, and then the others came after me, you know. And we were just an ordinary family.
Did you live in this house?
Mm-hmm.
Did you live in this house?
No, we lived uptown on what was then called Howard Street, but it's Lee Street today.
Oh.
It's called Lee Street now. Up there on Lee Street, there were two stone houses, one on the corner, and the next one to it, when Miss Wee lived. And then there was another house on the other side of us, and on following that, we went out to Main Street. And we lived there, then were homes across the street from us. That would be one, two, three. Three homes across the street. And in those early days when we lived up there, of course, there was days of unpaved streets and unpaved highways, too.
Mm-hmm.
And we just had a nice, happy time up there. But as the town grew and the homes were being built, then we had to move or else buy the home we were renting. And we had to move or else buy the home in which we were living. And my mother preferred to move rather than to stay up in that section. Then they were beginning to, the noble folks were moving in, it was rather noisy.
Well,
and so we had this house, found this house down here.
Oh.
This home down here belonged to a colored lady, Mrs. Or had. Probably you know Mr. Whittington.
Yes, ma'am.
Well, it belonged to his aunt.
Oh, mm-hmm.
And we came down here first as renters, and then later on she wanted to get rid of the house, and we purchased it from her. And of course, after we purchased it, we made some improvements in it. And we've lived here ever since. But my first years, of course, were spent uptown.
Mm-hmm.
And I said to my sisters the other day, every time I have a dream about my life, early life, I always go uptown. I never dream that I'm down here.
Oh.
I always dream that I'm uptown.
Oh.
Well, when, of course, I don't know anything about my two older brothers. I don't know them. They died in infancy.
Oh.
And my sister, who was two or three years older than I, we were the two oldest, and then there were two boys. But I played with my brothers rather than with my sister. She was the oldest girl, an oldest child, living child, you see. And she, I suppose, liked to be to herself, and she stayed to herself, and I played with my brothers.
Oh.
And with them, I was just as tomboyish as they were. I'd like to ride bicycles, I'd like to go ice skating,
yeah,
and all of those sort of things that boys usually do, you know. And I would say to them, so, but I was always sickly.
Oh.
I was born, I imagine I was born sickly, I don't know, but I was always sickly. I was, had the doctor on the early, and he told my mother that I needed to stay out in the fresh air all the time. And that was one of the reasons why that I couldn't go to school when it was time for me to go to school in the city, to go to high school. I couldn't attend high school regularly because of my health. And even after I started teaching, I missed a great deal of time. Now, I think you said they gave the record that I, on the record that I taught 48 years?
Yes.
Well, I did, I was in the system 48, mm-hmm. but I was out a whole year.
Oh.
Out of school. That is, it was to about 2 months.
Hmm.
I was in the hospital half that time, another part of the time, and I was at home. And that prevented me from finishing. I had only had 2 years of high school.
Oh, mm-hmm.
And I wanted so desperately to go back, of course, to high school. But my doctor said that I had to stay out in the, you know, country on account of my health condition. So I had a nice teacher. His name was Mr. Stanley, James T. Stanley. And he was so sorry that I couldn't finish, you know, the high school. Then he said, "Well, can you come down here every afternoon?" And he told me what time it was, 3:30, come to school, and I'll help you with your work.
Oh, he taught up here?
Uh-huh.
Did he teach here? Or
he he was a teacher. He was my principal anyhow before I even went to Baltimore school. See, when I went to Baltimore, I spent 2 years in the high school there.
Oh.
And then I was sick and I had to come home. And my doctor said I shouldn't go back. And of course, in those days, your parents listened to what the doctor said. And
sure.
I wanted to go, but my mother wouldn't let me go. And therefore, my teacher was still here, Mr. Stanley. I will call him Stanley. Mr. Stanley. And so he knew how anxious I was to go to school. And he always encouraged me to go because he told me he thought that I had been making of a good teacher.
Mm-hmm.
He used to say that to me in school, you know. So he told me if I would come down to school between 3:30 and 4:00, be there when school let out at 4:00, bring with me my books that I had brought with me from high school.
Yes.
He would help me.
Oh.
And he did. And so when in the fall of 1911, he said, "Cornelia, the teachers are going to meet here, and they're going to have an examination." Said, Mr. Wright always gives an examination, a test to the teachers. I said, "Would you like to take the test?" And so just see what we've done in in this time you've been coming to me. So I said yes. And I took the test and I passed.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
I passed the test, but I didn't think I would get in because of two things. I hadn't completed high school and my age. So,
how old were you then?
I was about 16 or 17. So Mr. Stanley said, "Don't worry about that, Mr. I'll talk to Mr. Wright." So Mr. Wright said, "There is a vacancy up to Rocks. And would you like to go up there and teach in this latest place that she's sick and won't be back until after Christmas. Would you like to go in her place?" And of course, I read the jump at that. I said, "Yes, but I'll have to consult my mother because I knew, you know, how she felt about it." she had all the worry with me, and I didn't know if she was going to say yes or no. So when I went home for lunch, I asked her, and she said, I said, Mr. Stanley said he's coming up to talk to you. She said, well, I guess so. That's what I said to him casually. And I went back all elated and told them that I could go. My mother said I could go up there and take a try. I would try at it. So Mr. Stanley came up to see my mother and talked to her. And I found myself going out to the rocks.
How did you get up there?
Well, my mother inquired about, you know, the rocks, because she didn't know anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
But fortunately for us, one of our neighbors was from the rocks.
Oh.
That is, her parents had lived up there. And she had told my mother how you could get up there. Up on the train, then they had a train from Ballet up there. They used to call it the Ma and Pa train, Maryland, Pennsylvania train. And so she told my mother how I could get there. And they contacted Mr. Dunson, the person that was in charge, you know, what they call them then, trustees. He was a trustee of the school.
Mm-hmm.
And he was to meet me, and which he did. And I went up there. And he looked at me so strangely when I got off the train. He says, is this Miss Ruff? I said, yes. I try and act like a woman. I said, yes, and I have come to teach. So he said, all right. He said, they told us that there'd be a teacher that would come up here in place of to stay until Christmas, after Christmas. But I didn't know you were coming. And he said, you look like a person. He was from North Carolina, and he says, you look like a person from North Carolina. And I could have sworn it was this girl, and her name was Roxanna. He called the last name. Her name was Roxanna. So he said, I'm going to call you Roxanna. And from then on, he called me Roxanna. And and went up to the house, and they had a granddaughter. So, when I went in, Florence looked at me and said, is this the teacher? And her grandfather said, yes. And she says, well, I'm not going to school anymore.
Oh, no.
I'm not going to school anymore. And my grandmother said, yes, you are. Yes, you are. So Florence and I became good friends. She called me Roxanne all the time, just like her grandfather had called me. And I just called her Florence, and she didn't. She went to school about 2 days. And then, so I went down to he took me to the school. And I had, only what Mr. Stanley had told me, that I didn't have no idea what to do.
Oh.
But Mr. Stanley had told me some things that I was supposed to do. And I'm not too sure, it's been so long. I know I didn't have more than 10 or 12 children there that came to school. And so Mr. Dunson stayed with me until we got settled. And they had an organ in the school. And I played the organ. That was wonderful for them to have music, you know. And I asked them, did they know some piece that was for me without about it? I don't know what it was now. Anyhow, they knew it.
Okay.
And I played it. And they sang. Mrs. Dunson stayed with me until we opened up. And after we opened up, Mr. Wright came in. And he was pleased that I was pleased, and the children always had Miss Ruff. And he explained to me about the roll book, how to arrange my rolls and so forth. And he started me off that way. And but he told me I had to have at least 15 on roll, and a daily attendance of 11. And if I didn't keep him up, he would find out, because Mr. Johnson was to tell him.
Mm-hmm.
And if I didn't keep him up, of course I couldn't hold the school for the lady who was sick.
Oh.
She had to have that number. And when the word got around that they had a teacher, then they came, and I guess I had 17 or 18,
oh,
the highest number. I had old ones and young ones. I had boys in there who were older than I.
Mm.
And of course, Florence and I were around the same age, but she only stayed one day, so I couldn't count on Florence. And so school began up to Rock, and I taught up there for a number of years. Not too long, it wasn't too long up there, because there was a vacancy down to Fairview, Forest Hill. And Mr. Wright asked me if I'd like to go down there. And I said yes, but during the time that I was up there, when I came to Bel-Air to the office, Mr. Anderson, who was Mr. Wright's secretary, said, you haven't finished high school, have you? I said, no. He says, why don't you go to school, summer school? And then he told me about summer school, and he says, you can finish up your education by going to school. And he told me where I could go. He gave the name of the school. Of course, that pleased me, and my mother wrote to, that was up to Cheney in Pennsylvania. And I found out that was just the place to go, because I learned the foundation of teaching, you know, up there. And so I went to Cheney and kept on going to Cheney for, I guess, about three or four summers. Would spend time up there at Cheney. And after I had spent my time at Cheney, and I was being promoted all the time, when I'd come back to Bel-Air, I had to take the examinations. They required me to, you know, since I was going to try to stay in the system,
mm-hmm.
they required me to take examinations, and you were graded. At that time, they graded the teachers at first, second, and third class. I was put in the third class, because I hadn't finished. I was put in third class. I took the first examination, but I moved up to the second class. Because I had been summer school, and I had learned some of the rudiments of school. I had observed the teachers up there and noticed what they did and so forth. And so when I took my examination, I got in second class. And then when I kept on going to summer school each summer, and I took the next time I took the examination, I was in the first class. And I was so happy then, and I was learning how to do two things, how to teach and the background of education, my subjects, you know.
Yes.
And I took the subjects that were necessary for me, like psychology and those sort of things that I was necessary for me to take. And when I came, they put me in the, graded me as being first class teacher. And that meant that I had completed my high school.
Oh, yeah.
And you know I was a happy soul.
Oh,
so I said to my mother, I'm now first class, and I've completed my high school work, and I'm going to apply to Morgan College.
Oh.
And see if I can't get to Morgan College.
Oh.
And she encouraged me. My mother encouraged me all the way, and so I made application to Morgan College, but I didn't have my, you know, diploma thing that I had. But I met Mr. Wilson, who was the registrar, and Mr. Wilson said, I told him my sad story and how I had, you know, it worked and why I didn't finish and so forth. So he had a consultation with the proper persons and authority at the board.
Yes.
And they looked up my record, and they recommended me. They recommended me to take a college work. And then I registered in Morton College. But I couldn't stop to go to Morton College as the students used the division. I had to take it through the summer courses. And Mr. Wilson was very nice, he was lovely to me, because he told me the subjects that I need, how many credits I would need, and what subjects to take. And those subjects I took. And I struggled along with that work until 1940. I had finished my college and was ready to get my first degree. And you know, I was but the saddest thing about it all is I often think about it, my mother passed before. And I had said to her, when my name is called, you're going to be there, of course. She said, you know I will. And I said, and I'm going to ask Mr. Wilson ahead of time if I can give you my diploma.
Oh.
And he told me I could. And I said, and when they call my name, I said, I'm going to call it for you and let them give you my diploma because you deserve it.
Oh.
And she was so tickled over that, you know, which my mother's health then was failing. Mm-hmm. So she didn't live to see me get my first degree. Mm-hmm. After I got that, I was still hungry, wanted to keep going.
Oh.
And I made an application then up to NYU.
Oh.
I went up to New York University. And I was accepted up there. And I kept on working up there.
Mm.
And in between, I went to different, you know, college schools.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't get everything up there, but I mean, whatever I needed, I would go. So, of course, I went over here to Delaware. Not, yes, it's called Delaware
State or University?
University, I think it's called State University, something like that.
In Delaware?
I spent a year, not a year, summer over there, you know, taking different courses because I knew what was required.
Yeah.
And I went over there. And outside of Morton College.
Mm-hmm.
And I kept on struggling more in college and 1940.
Mm.
I mean, I'm wrong. I'm not talking about more in college than that. I kept on struggling until I had this letter from NYU telling me that I was eligible then for my master's degree.
Mm.
And I received my master's degree up there. And by that time, my health wasn't too good, and I was getting older and had been in the system so long, had been teaching all the time, because see, I taught all the time that I was in school,
mm-hmm.
that I was earning my education I was teaching, because I didn't have money So in during that time, I met up with Miss Ross, and she came down. Same enough, she came to Happy Grace because she too was substituting for a lady who married, and we became friends. And the two of us worked together, and we said after we met each other, we said that we were going to give money when we earned enough. We were going to give a scholarship to a deserving child. We said then, and she was teaching one place and I was teaching another. But we met, and our cases were similar. Only I was the sick person, but her mother was the sick person in her case. She couldn't, finish on account of her mother. So we said we would do that. Well, when Central was open, and between the central. And the first month that we were there, the check was high enough for us to say, oh, now's the time to help somebody else.
Oh, yeah.
And that was in 52. So I said to Bertha, how much shall we give? And she said, well, I don't know. What do you give for scholarship? I said, I don't know. I said, don't call it a scholarship thing. You won't call it a scholarship. You just give to help. So we told I told Dr. Williams, I said, Miss Rawson, I want to give to a deserving student. And he said, that's fine.
Was he the principal?
He was the principal. Dr. Williams was the principal at the central at that time. Mm-hmm. And I said, that we want to give because this is the first time that we have seen a check that looked like money. So we always said the first time our salary was increased, we were going to do that. So he said, well, that's fine, it's wonderful. And we'll call it the Ruff and Ross Scholarship. And I said, well, it's not a scholarship. I don't know what you would call it because we only give them $25.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, that's all right. That's all right, he said, $25. And we gave us $25. And finally, it went on from there up to Bertha died in the meantime. And so I said to the members of the committee at the school, I said, I'm going to increase it and make it $50. I'll give in the memory of Bertha. Before Bertha passed, do you want this?
Yes.
Information?
Sure.
Before Bertha passed, she said, well, Neil, they call me Neil, said, let's give to the school $100. And I said, all right. And I said, we'll give that. And we'll leave $500, make our donation $50 a year, and we'll put $500 in the bank, and that's for the continuation. After we have gone, we never thought about integration.
Oh.
We weren't looking for that. And we thought we'd put this $500 in the bank. Well, that money would last at least 10 years, we thought, at $50 a year.
Yes.
After our death. But in, what was that, in around, she passed, and in, I guess my years right now, in 54, I think it was, we found out that, 64, after school, we found out that it was going to be integration. And we would have to then go with the whites, you know. And there's our $500 we had in the bank for the deserving student from Central. And it wasn't going to be called Central anymore. It had to change the name. So Mr. Davis said to me, he was on the committee after school, we had a scholarship fund called the Central Consolidated Scholarship Fund. Mr. Davis said, I'm sorry they're going to disband. We have to disband, but I think they should continue. And he said, it'd be nice, Ms. Ruff, if you would be our president. And I said, oh, no. And Mrs. Green, Reverend Green's wife, said, oh, yes. We want you to stay with us, and you be the president. And said, we'll find places to meet, because see, we had to find another meeting place. So we had to have a name. And she said, we have to have a name, so I'm going to call it Ruff and Ross scholarship fund.
Mm-hmm.
That's how he got his name, Ralph and Ross, because he said, you two were the first and only colored teachers who ever gave, that I have ever heard, has given any money. She said, now I've been around here all my life in Harford County, and the teachers have been nice to the children, but they haven't gone that far. And I said, well, $25 wasn't too much. She said, that's all right. It's more than they gave.
Mm-hmm.
And said, so you did go up to $50. So I'm going to call it Russell Ross. I said, Miss Ross is dead.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want my name. I thought dead people was the one, the all right for them, but not for a live person to have the name on it. She said, it's Ruff and Ross Educational Fund.
So it
stays that way. Then someone else said, yes, we're going to have it incorporated. And they did. Then it was called Ruff and Ross Educational Fund Incorporated. So when we disbanded, we hadn't any place to go. And we didn't know just what we were going to do. We had My life story.
Very interesting. So you had a lawyer tell you?
We had a lawyer.
Yes.
And this lawyer made out the, we told him the objective of the scholarship, why we wanted to have this scholarship. It was to motivate.
Yes.
It was for motivation. We want to motivate the boys and girls who came out of high school. We want to motivate them to continue their education.
Yes.
That was the, and because of that, we started, we had the scholarship fund. And after we were properly incorporated and all with the officers, then we began working on the Ruff and Ross Scholarship Fund.
Yes.
And our chairpersons were excellent ones. We had, I was sick again. And Mr. Dorsey had to be, he's a blonde actually.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Dorsey took my place, because he was one of the members. I mean, he took my place as the president. Acting, he was vice president, and he was now called acting vice president. And I didn't go to the meetings for about 3 or 4 years. I wasn't able to go. I was sick, half sick all the time.
Uh-huh.
And those officers carried on the Ruff and Ross Scholarship Fund without my presence.
Mm-hmm.
They were just that interested in it, you know, and concerned.
Mm-hmm.
And they were dedicated persons and efficient too. So they carried on the work for me. I always say that. And I still to this day I appreciate what they, you know, what they did for me at that time and for ever since we've had the Ruff and Ross organization. Leonard Jones was, do you know him?
Mm-hmm.
Leonard Jones was made the chairperson for the scholarship fund.
Mm-hmm.
You know Viola Scott?
Yes. Yes.
Well, she was made the chairperson for the program, and they have done a marvelous job, both of them. But the others, the secretary, I can't leave out Miss Mary Baum, Baum Berry, because she was Mary Baum at first, Berry. And then we had, in fact, all of them have helped. And I, as I told them one time when we met, I said, you've not only worked with me, but you've worked for me. And you really, and they have, and they carried on the work because I wasn't able to go. And they did everything. And is it necessary for me to tell you all this?
That's very interesting. This is
and we carried that on for a long while, and then we started saying a little more. We were making more. I must say this though, we had the alumni. They said, well, Miss Ruffy, you gave to us when we couldn't help. Now we're going to give to you. And I thought that was such a lovely statement. Was made when the boy told me that. He said, so we don't want you to pay. See, I still gave my $50 every year. Just the same. We don't want you to do that. And the alumni said, we'll do it. But I still paid my 50. And they worked, and you know, some years, when they would have their affairs, they would bring in $1,200.
Mm.
And all of that was put into our treasury, see. And therefore, we were able to give scholarships to the students. And we said at the beginning, since it was integration, colored children would be all over the county, we would place two scholarships to each of the high schools. And we did that. At that time, there were 7 high schools. Yes, it was 7 high schools. And we gave, had our program under Mr. Scott's supervision, or Jones, I don't know what I call Scott. Viola Scott. Because she was a chairperson. And we would have a member from the Board of Education. They would come down, and that was Mr. Neely. Do you know him?
Yes.
He was a former member of the board. I think his number of years was 1,000. He's not a member of the board now, of the Board of Education. And he would always come, and Leonard would have him, and he would make a nice little speech and present the children with a slip of paper. Mm-hmm. At first, we just had a slip of paper telling the recipient mm-hmm. that you're entitled to this $100. That was $100, and you would go to the school of your choice. If you make a C grade, and you must make a C grade. By the midterm, then we will send this $100 to your school. And that's what we did for a while. So later on, with the help of the alumni, we were able to increase it to $150. But we still had the same form that have in the June, we'd always have the rough and raw day, they call it. At this time, we would have an educational program plus the awarding of these, I would guess you'd call little certificates anyhow, announcements of their acceptance. They were the recipients. So we have done that ever since. In the last few years, however, the alumni went on its own. They had their charter. And they didn't sever themselves from us, but they didn't give us the cooperation and help. I don't say cooperation, let me say help, not cooperate, because they did cooperate with us. But they didn't give us the financial help that we had been receiving. But we were able to make up for that by having affairs of our own, you know. At one time we had a bingo, and we cleared $385.
Wow.
And we have a lovely committee that works with them, Leonard Jones on his committee that works in them. And so we've done very well, and we increased the scholarship to $150. So we're now giving $150, and we only give 13. Because having degrees, school gives one scholarship only. That's Leon S. Roy. They had a principal there, a fine man named Leon S. Roy. They don't have a scholarship organization such as we have, but they do help, you know, one student, and they give that one student all the money that they make. which of course is more than our little $150. And so therefore we only give 13 of them. But the high schools have, in the county, have increased. And Leonard was telling me not too long ago that he would have to, his committee would have to get together and they'd have to make other plans, you know, because we won't be able to raise that much money. But we do help them out, and it is an incentive.
Yes.
And you know, we have made available over 120 scholarships since we've been organized. And about 90 or 95 have been accepted. And we, some of them said one day in talking, such and such a one didn't stay in school. I say this, if he had 1 year of high school, of training above high school,
yes,
that's an incentive.
Mm-hmm.
So we still haven't failed.
No.
Because he knows then that something about what it's all about.
Mm-hmm.
And he knows the world needs him. And in some cases, later on, they have come back and, you know, gotten good jobs because they have worked on their own.
Mm-hmm.
But they have had at least 1 year above the scholarship, I mean the required year.
Mm-hmm.
So we've been doing nicely with the scholarship one, and all. And I have enjoyed the work immensely, teaching, studying, and working with the children. Dr. Williams said to me one day, "Miss Ruff, how many children do you think you've taught?" I told him, "I don't know, because I started when I was over there in the Rocks with about 10, 11 children, and I don't know how many I really have had all through the years, but I've always gotten along nicely with children.
Mm-hmm.
I have loved children. My mother used to say, 'Curb that temper, you're too quick.' Because there used to be a word and a blow with me.
Uh-uh.
Playing with the boys. I would play with my brothers.
Right.
And they were rough and I was rough with them." So that's the way.
When you worked with Ames Sunday School, was this during your time teaching or was this after your time?
I went there first. I taught in the primary grades, you know, how to take the girl, but the girls have in a small church like we had. And I used to teach in the primary grades. Then when I learned, I was given the music, then I played for them. I used to play Sunday school. And I grew up doing that, you know, teaching and playing for the children in Sunday school. And finally, the superintendent of the Sunday school for some reason left. I don't know that, that's why. Anyhow, they hadn't any superintendent, but I was always there every Sunday helping Mrs. Maddox. So the pastor said to me, "Why don't you try it?" So you've been working under Mrs. Maddox, and you're here every Sunday. And you like the children, children all like you, said, "Go ahead and try it." So I did. I began work with his help. I began working as a superintendent. And then, of course, I got materials, Sunday school books and what have you, and read up on all of those. No wonder I can't see now. Because I read my head off trying to, you know, get things straight. I didn't want anything to go wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I want things to be right.
Yeah.
And so I worked along with the Sunday school. Went through the sessions, Sunday school sessions, when they would have them in Baltimore.
Mm-hmm.
And learned what they were doing there, observed what they were doing there, come back and put it into operation in my own Sunday school. And we had, at one time, we had at least 65 or 70 children in Sunday school.
Yeah.
And I used to do this. I used to go around. I used to visit them, you know. And if the children weren't there, I'd go see why. I didn't ask them, I went to the parents. Mm-hmm. Always went to the parents and asked the parents why. I did the same thing when I was teaching. I find out where my children live, and I would say to them, what Sunday do you have church? Because, you know, in the rural sections, they had church every other Sunday, yes, or something like that, in some places. Mm-hmm. And they would say, we're going to have it next Sunday. And I said, all right, I'll be there next Sunday. Then children would come out to see who's there, you know, and the parents would go there and visit. And I did the same thing with Sunday school when I was here. And the children didn't come, and I said, you weren't in Sunday school, no. Why? And you know how they hesitate. Mm-hmm. So I'd go see the parents. All the parents, right here in Bel Air, I'd go around to the homes and talk to the parents. And they're all right, Liz, I'll send them out, they'll be out there. And the children came, and we had 65 or 70, and we had lovely programs in the church. Mm-hmm. I always had programs for them because they were anxious for that. I can, you know, Dicey Homer. She's a member of our church. Well, she has a daughter named Sadie. And if I didn't have a program of some kind, Sadie would say, Miss Cornelia, when are you going to have something? When are you going to have something? And they were anxious. So with children, you got to keep them, you know, on the go. Something attractive, interesting, and they'll come. And we used to have lovely Sunday school programs, singing, always sang, lovely lively songs, and had drills and marches and what have you. And the Sunday school was worth attending. Of course, as the years went by, they changed the system now somewhat. I was talking to the girl, Dorothy, not too long ago. And I told her, I said, I don't hear anything about Sunday school. Oh, it's fine, she said. But personally, I didn't think so because, for this reason, they don't have any activity that's drawing cards. Mm-hmm. And when Sunday school gets down to 8, 9, 10 children, I don't think, you know, there's something lacking there. If the children are available, not that no children here. And today, Bel Air's, all the homes have been torn down, you know that. And there are very few homes in which the people live. Mm-hmm. And they have moved out, and that really makes a difference. But when I was young and coming up, all the homes, all up and down Back Street, we call it Back Street, that's Bond Street, and through Howard Street and Allison Street, and all around there were children, plenty of children. But the unfortunate thing is our parents, most of the parents rented. That was a rub. They rented instead of, you know, owning the home. And if they had owned the home, more owned the homes, I'll say, put it that way. Some did own them. Then probably they would have held on to the homes and the town wouldn't have taken them. Maybe not, I don't know. The laws are different. It's a curious thing, you know, they might have required them. But life has meant a great deal to me. It's meant much happiness. I've had sadness. But I've had much happiness. I've enjoyed working with the children, enjoyed working in the church. Mm-hmm. And in the Sunday school in particular, I always had Christmas plays, Easter plays. And I've done very nicely. And when I found out that my sight was failing and I couldn't play for the choir, I was a hurt soul. I couldn't do the things that I would like to do. But God knows best.
Well, could you tell me, when the school integrated in 64, were you about to retire, or did you go into the integrated school system?
I retired before that. I had retired before the integration came. I had retired. I wasn't thinking of retirement. I had taught a number of years, of course, but Miss Ross and I were friends, and she lived here with me. She was from Philadelphia, and she lived here with me. And all of a sudden, she decided that she wanted to retire. And I didn't know that she had even mentioned to Dr. Williams, the principal. And Dr. Williams came to me and said, Miss Ross wants to retire. And that was in 59. And I said, is that so? Why? He said, I don't think she's well. So she doesn't look this, as if she feels too good. And he said, she wants to retire. And I don't know what to say about it. I don't like to tell her no. I wish she would stay. And she said she's going to see if you offer a job because you've been friends all along and you worked together and you earned your first degree, a first year degree together and your second degree together. We did. And she is unmarried and has no family, but older ones in her family, like aunts and such. And you have no one in your family, your sister and brother, so she wants to retire. And she thinks it'd be nice if you would retire with her. I said, well, she hadn't been down to my room. She was on the elementary side, and I was on the high school side. And so when Berta came over, she said yes. And Dr. Williams told me to go down to the office this afternoon. I'm going this afternoon to see Mr. I don't know what his name is. I can't call his name. He had charge of the teachers, you know, you report to him. I forget his name. I can see him, but I can't call his name. So, and I said, why? And she said, I don't feel good, Neil. And I think I'll stay out of school. I said, well, Bert, I'm thinking about going back to school next year. Oh. I want to work on my doctorate. Mm. And she said, well, I'll go up to New York, wherever you go, I'll go with you to be company for you. But there's no more school for me. And said, I'm leaving. Said, something tells me to stop. I should have stopped years ago, but I mean, just kept staying in here. So both of us should have been out. So we have no reason to stay here. We have no children, and we don't have, our parents are dead. And why do we just stay here and work yourself to death? Said, I would like to travel. I said, I would like to travel. So I told Dr. Williams that I was retired. I said, when? He said, now. As of now, I said, that now? He said, yes. Will you go along with me? Well, I reasoned it out. I said, like she did, I didn't have any reason to stay in there. So I said, I guess so. And we went right down to the board that afternoon and talked to the person in authority there. I can't call his name now, a lovely man. He's retired since then. And he said, oh, I don't want you ladies to retire. He said, don't retire. He said, take a sabbatical leave and then come back. And Berta said, no, my mind's made up. And then he said, well, there's nothing I can do. So he wrote us up. And that was in June. And in November, she died.
Oh, she knew she was dying.
Mm-hmm. In November, she died. But that was why we retired. I suppose they would have kicked us out anyhow. We'd stayed much longer because we were still there. And I was enjoying the work. Mm-hmm. And the children were nice, you know, and all. Although several of the teachers said to me, you did the right thing to get out of this because the children are so bad now and uncontrollable. They're not like the way when you first started. So But I always felt that I wouldn't have had that much trouble with them. I don't know, I might have. I used to say to the children, "All right, ma'am, my name is Ruff, but I'm only Ruff when you make me Ruff." I used to tickle Mr. Wright. He was crossing the hall from me. I said, "All right, I'm only Ruff when you make me Ruff. My name is Ruff, R-U-F-F. But if you make me R-O-U-G, I can get Ruff too." So we retired. And since the retirement, my sight began to get bad after school. Because I had to leave after school, because I was central. I had to be out for, I guess, in all about 8 months. Not consecutively, but, you know, once in a while. I had to be out. I was smiling because I was out so long, and we had a pastor here whose name was Reverend Davis, and he was the substitute for me. So whenever he would come down here, he would say to Minnie, he said, "How's your sister?" And Minnie would tell him. And Minnie said to me one day, "You let Reverend Davis say, you better get better, because Reverend Davis asked me every day how you are, and he's grinning, he'll take your job from you." And I told him, "Oh, it was all the fun he wanted." He laughed. Because he's down here every day, Minnie said, asking about you. Said, "Next thing he'll take his job, you better hurry up and get well." I've enjoyed working in the church, and enjoyed very much in the church. I got along nicely with those in the church. I served under Mrs. Whittington. She was the president of the Women's Society of Christian Service. What do they call it now?
Methodist Women.
I served under Mrs. Whittington, and we used to have lovely programs under Mrs. Whittington. I was chairman of the, vice president, and at that time the vice president was chairman of the all the activities, like Women's Day and whatever other days you choose to have. And we used to have nice programs at that time. For Women's Day we'd have a lovely program, and we'd always have a nice program, and we'd have the pastor would be on his vacation, and that fourth Sunday in the month. I had a friend in Baltimore whose name was Braxton, and she was a great worker in Trinity Church. And Ella said, "Now, Connie, if you want to have an affair, I'll come out." And she would come up here and bring two and three buses.
Ooh.
On that Sunday. And it was called Trinity Day.
Oh.
And the members of the choir would come, and the other members, and they would spend the whole day, and they would eat dinner up here, and the committee in the kitchen would have prepared dinner for them. And the nicest thing about it was that they never left here with the things that we failed to sell, like we'd have corn. They'd buy the corn. If it had some cakes on the table, they'd buy the cakes. Whatever we had, they would take it, you know. And when they left here, everything was gone, sold out. If we had charged then like they charge now for things, we certainly would have had a lovely treasure. Because things are so high today, you know. And we had a lovely day. We call that Trinity Day. In the church of here.
Now, before Ames was United Methodist,
it was Ames Methodist Church, and then when the churches were integrated, they called themselves the United Methodist Church. Then the United Methodist Church now is United,
yes.
Because it's white and colored. At first, we had a colored bishop, I knew him when I was in class out in Warren with his wife. His name was Bishop Lowe.
Oh.
And his brother was the commencement speaker when I graduated.
Oh.
Dr. Lowe.
Did the integration of the schools, how did that run? Was that smooth?
There were separate color schools. There were separate schools. Whites went to themselves, the colored went to themselves.
Yeah.
Even the curricula wasn't the same, believe it or not. The books weren't the same. Now, Mr. Wright, or the school board, was saying to me, use the best of the used books from the white schools. Now, those were the books that my children used, and what was true in my school was true all over the county.
Yeah.
And they would mark in there. They were shrewd, too. They would mark on inside the book, fair.
Mm-hmm.
That meant this book that you're getting is in fair condition. And this one would be good. Well, that's almost practically new. And then you didn't, but sometimes you get a new book, but very seldom. And they would, but you use the books that the white school was discarded, you would use those books. And that's the way I taught, had to teach with my, and not only did I teach, all of us, the colored teachers, because it was a separation all the way through there. Although Mr. Wright was a fine person, I liked him. I liked him very much. I mean, he was thoughtful. And to me, now I'm talking about myself,
mm-hmm.
He was thoughtful and helpful to me. And he was always, if he would come to my, visit my classroom, and he saw something that he thought could be improved upon, or he could tell me and I could check on it, he would do so. But not in that, you know, stern, bossy way.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't do this, you should do that. But he would, now, Miss Ross, I noticed such and such a thing, and I think this will help improve that condition.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you didn't mind a person like that. You're welcome when they would, you know, would mention things.
Yeah.
And he was just that type, and I liked him, and I liked him very much. And I liked Mr. Of course, I guess Mr. Wright couldn't do any better because his board, you know, he had the board behind him.
Mm-hmm.
And whether he would have, you know, changed things or not, I don't know. But I feel, always have felt that Mr. Wright would have been much nicer to the school. When you said you were from Connecticut, we had a white supervisor, I don't know her name, who was from Connecticut, and I don't know where in Connecticut, but she boarded down the street here somewhere with some white people below us,
mm-hmm.
And that was when I was struggling to get through, and my mother was friendly, and she was friendly, this is a lady from Connecticut,
mm-hmm.
And my mother would be outside of arranging flowers because they had lovely flowers out front.
Mm-hmm.
And this lady would come here. She was a white supervisor. And in that way, I know my mother told her that I was teaching. She was proud of it, you know.
Yes.
So she told my mother that if I needed any help, she would help me. So whenever we had, twice, we had an examination and had to go, you know, from first grade to third grade up. Well, people went up, you know,
yes.
I told you, had a grade assistant. She left here one day several books that were, you know, that I should read up and check up on.
Oh.
And I never forgotten her. I know she's from Connecticut.
Mm.
And I didn't know her. She always told my mother, I want to come down and see your daughter. I want to talk to her. And I'm going to tell me, but we never had a chance, you know, to meet. She wasn't here too long, but she was very friendly and very, very helpful because she left these books for me to look over and know. said they would help me in the examination, and maybe they, you know, was the cause of my being able to go from one grade up to the another. But she was a nice person, very nice person. Life in Harford County has been nice. I've always been helpful. I like to be helpful. And I know we had there were colored people lived here in Bel Air, and his name was Turner. Mr. Turner used to sing on our choir. And we miss him so much. He had a lovely bass voice. He knew music too, could read music. He had taken music under a professor in Baldwin named Professor Truman. And he knew music, could read music. And on our choir at that time, Mrs. Turner could read music. And Miss Ross read music. She could read music. And we had one or two others who could read music. And we gave some of the finest musical concerts that you want to hear. We thought so anyhow. I'm praising about that. But it was, well, we were invited to Baltimore.
Wow.
We were invited to, our choir was invited to Baltimore. Mm-hmm. And our soloist, we sang Infamatus.
Oh.
Infamatus. And our soloist sang that part that you solo part in it.
Mm-hmm.
Girl from up here.
Oh.
So we weren't doing too bad, were we?
No.
And we used to sing anthems because Miss King, Daisy King, she knew music too. She's a musical lover. And our director was a musical lover. Walter was a musical lover. And there were three or four of us who could read music, you know. And that made it easier for the others because they could leave. And I just laughed to myself when I said that because Alberta sang contralto.
Oh.
Miss Ross sang contralto. And we tried to get those altos, separate them, you know. And when Berta would sing contralto, the altos would come right down there with her. If she sang they was alto, they were all right. That was their voice, that was their key. But as soon as Berta would sing contralto, they would all fall down. Wouldn't have any altos. We had lots of fun on the choir, learning the singing, you know.
Yeah.
The lady from Connecticut was very nice. I can't remember her name, but I didn't know her too well. But she used to help us because she would give material to my mother and tell my mother, you give it to your daughter and tell her this will help us in a test. And it would help us too. Bert and I would take the material and read. I think in general the people were pretty good, you know. And then I started to tell you before I may happen to think of that sort of thing, laugh over this king and then. The war was on. That was the time for the World War, you know.
Yes.
And Mrs. Mamie Turner, Mr. Turner's wife, was interested in the Red Cross. She was interested in the Red Cross. And she said, asked me, she said, Neil, would you like to help me with the Red Cross? She was appointed, or they had asked her if she would, you know, help with the Red Cross, secure funds. And I said, yes, I don't mind. And then I went in with Mamie, but Mamie didn't stay too long. She was half sick or something. I don't know why. She gave it up. And I took over the Red Cross. And we used to have meetings. And we filled kits. And worked around. Elizabeth Whittington was one of the persons. And Mildred Dawson. And many. Mm-hmm. And my sisters had died here at Christmas time, mm-hmm. and others. And we used to go up to the building on Hayes Street up here, mm-hmm. and we would, up there we worked in the cancer, and we worked with the cancer people. And I used to go all around to the various places and, you know, try to talk up the Red Cross. And I had the children in my school. I would tell them to tell the parents, and I was sending down to Asbury and all around. I was asking for donations, and they would send me a dollar. And at that time, it had a little thing to put in the window, cross, Red Cross,
yeah.
that you stuck in your door or your window to show that you were a contributor.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a dollar. They'd give me a dollar. I had all the children who lived in Churchville, wherever they lived.
Mm-hmm.
And I would ask them to ask the mother if they would send me a contribution of $1, and I'd send them one of these stickers that go on the window or door.
Mm-hmm.
And I worked with Mrs. Gross, oh, I don't know how long. In fact, until she passed. She passed. And then I started working with the cancer people. And I used to go up to the building, a health building up here, and I had several of them to go with me. I mentioned many, and Mildred Dorsey, and a girl over here named Anna Dorsey, her sister, different ones. And we used to go up there, spend one night every a week, making pads, cancer pads, you know, they had a little, something. I don't know if you ever know them or know about them. When the cancer pads, you get 2-3 sizes, some of them small, 2-inch square, and another would be 4-inch like that, and 5-inch. And we had the material that came, you know, the large sheets.
Mm-hmm.
And we would cut them all out and make cancer pads for the cancerous people.
Mm-hmm.
And we did that one night every week for at least 2 years. We would go up there, up here to the health building on Hayes Street, and work for the cancer people. And then after that, I used to go to the meetings. They have meetings, I would attend the meetings. And when they have, they always had a card party every year, and I'd make a contribution to the card party. And I worked also with the Red Cross people and the cancer people. I worked with both of them.
You've really been busy and active,
haven't you? I've been busy, and I've enjoyed it. And I have that now to look back on, because I can't do the things that I would like to do. If I could see, I think, you know, I could read up and find out. I have to get most of my information off the air.
Yes.
And it's conflicting, you know that.
Mm-hmm.
You read, listen one time, and one reporter saying one thing, and then another reporter will talk about that same subject and give another version of it, which is, I guess that's natural anyhow. People see things in different light angles.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, when you can reach out as a sponsor and touch somebody, be right there yourself and see it. It's so much better than the other way around. And I've enjoyed life.
Mm-hmm.
I've enjoyed life and still enjoying it.
Yeah. You
never grow old.
No.
I don't believe in that. I don't believe that. A lady was talking to me the other day, and she said, "Miss Rock, how old are you?" About how old? I don't mean to be too inquisitive, but I was just wondering. You've done so many things, I wonder how old you are. And I said, a long while ago, I found a little poem. I was a then to read, and I found a little poem. I said, it's paraphrased, because I memorized it at one time, but I don't know it now it's from all of it, so it's paraphrased at the source there. And I said, age is a condition of the mind. When you have left your joys behind and your ambitions are dead, then you're old. But it's in life to keep you best, and it's in life to do your best, no matter how the years go by, no matter how the years fly. You are not old. So I told her that I had always tried in life to look ahead, not look behind, to look ahead, to look up, not down, and then help. I like to help. So it didn't make any difference how old I was. I like the poem. It's a condition of the mind. So it doesn't make any difference. She said, that's pretty good, Miss Brooke. I didn't have to tell her how old. I gave her my age or not, but I don't recall, ma'am. That shows age, doesn't it?
No.